Welcome to Committing Faith in Public. This is the podcast for people who want to be inspired by individuals and communities of faith doing good work in public. Our guests tell stories of their work of weaving a more just, kind, and diversity-inclusive society. Our starting place for stories is Oklahoma because that is where we live, and because many people, both in Oklahoma and beyond, are surprised when they learn that interreligious-friendly, pro-democracy, diversity-welcoming, public-good-oriented religion even exists in Oklahoma. So through this podcast, we're spreading good news and encouraging you in your faith and public life work. I'm Gary Peluso-Burden, President Emeritus at Phillips Theological Seminary in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and working on the Religion in Public Life initiative for the seminary. I'm joined today by the Reverend Shannon Fleck. Shannon is an ordained minister in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ and a graduate of Phillips. That was 2011?
Yeah.
She serves as the executive director of the Oklahoma Conference of Churches, and that's what I want to talk with her about today. Welcome, Shannon. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, great. Hey, let's assume that our listeners don't know what a statewide counselor conference of churches is. So why don't you help them understand what is the Oklahoma Conference of Churches?
Yeah, you know, a council of churches, which it's often called in other states, we are the Conference of Churches, which is a little different language-wise. But in general, when you're talking about a council of churches, it's a collective or coalition, a multiple Christian denominations, which have come together to be in conversation with one another and to act in ministry in a united effort.
At what level of church actually oftentimes joins a conference or a council of churches?
In the case of the Oklahoma Conference of Churches, it's the state level heads of the denominations that join the Conference of Churches along with their denominations, and we gather together. A Council of Communion Leaders gathers together, and it is those state level heads for the multiple denominations. However, an element that OCC has added in the past is membership for local congregations, because every denomination is ready to be a part of this broad, diverse ecumenical movement. But that doesn't mean local churches within the denomination are not ready and want to be a part of it. So you can also be a local church member of OCC. In addition, OCC has expanded to include interfaith houses of worship as members of OCC, as well as secular nonprofit organizations that are members of the coalition. And what that means, at least from where I sit, is that these are organizations, congregations, and denominations that want to be at the table with one another and believe that faith in public life, to use this very awesome language, is valuable and important, and that faith communities have something to offer the world, and that we need to be working together to do that effectively.
So with the expansion from not just the middle judicatories, but to include congregations and also some secular organizations, as well as some other faiths, has there been any conversation about changing the name?
Not in my tenure, which has only been about a year and a half. I foresee that that could happen in the future. I don't think it'll be anytime too soon.
Okay, well, I know that even the choice of conference rather than council, in fact, goes back to, for Roman Catholics, a council is reserved for either a council of Catholic bishops or a genuinely called ecumenical council of some sort in the history of the church. And so some places they went with the conference language rather than the council language.
Which is exactly what happened in
Oklahoma.
Yep, it was the archdiocese and the involvement of the Roman Catholic Church that that steered the conversation toward conference language rather than council language. Yeah.
And you've been with them how long now?
I joined OCC on staff in 2017. I was the director of community engagement for a little over a year before taking over as the acting executive director upon the retirement of my predecessor, and then took over in the full-time job in June of 2018.
And tell us what attracted you to that, to this kind of work. This is challenging work.
Yeah, you know, and I think that is a piece of what attracted me to it, because OCC is really primed and poised to fill a very large gap in the world of ministry. You know, local churches are doing great work in our state, and secular and civic organizations are doing great work in our state. And OCC is poised beautifully to be the connecting piece between those two elements of society and really bring them together to work holistically, more cohesively. And that's really the drive of how I envision OCC going forward. And at the heart of my vision is that we need to be connected to one another if we're going to do this powerful, life-changing, world-changing work. We need to really be in the trenches with one another and not isolated, you know, not isolated within the four walls of our individual church or the four walls of our individual denomination, or even, dare I say, the four walls of our faith tradition.
Right. I remember people from Southern California telling me that one of their reasons for getting involved in interfaith work was because they were tired of talking just to a shrinking group of people represented by their own Christian communions. But the diversity of faiths really broadened the conversation a lot.
Absolutely.
I know one of the temptations for ecumenical organizations, especially kind of broad-based ones, comprised of denominations with all kinds of different interests, is there's so much stuff you could be working on.
Right.
So what are the kinds of issues that OCC is focusing on right now?
In our format and structure, we have seven focus areas that we do advocacy around. Those seven, and I'm going to name these without losing a beat, hopefully. I say that out loud to hope. Criminal justice, education, the environment, health and wellness, immigration and refugees, poverty, and race and anti-discrimination. So those are our focus areas that OCC, over the course of probably the last 10 years, has determined is going to be at the base of what we're doing. However, you know, culture and society is always evolving and changing, and there are always topics that are going to rise to the top as far as need is concerned. So in the last year, we have really been hitting hard criminal justice reform and education. The reasons being, the state of Oklahoma is number one in the nation, and therefore number one in the world, for incarceration of both men and women. And that is, you know, that's an issue. That's an issue of morality when we are separating families, when incarceration is at an all-time high and we are at the top of the heap. That's a conversation that needs to be happening within our churches. And education, we're 49th in the nation for the state of our public education. And again, that's an issue of morality. That's an issue of faith. So we've really been honing in on those two issues. We are also finding that at the heart of all of these focus areas is really the nature of race disparity, race discrimination, and you know, just this notion that racism is alive and well, it is breathing, it's an entity that is in the pulse of our country, that we need to be hitting head on, because that's a thread that's weaving its way through all of these focus areas that OCC has.
Absolutely.
So we've really upped the ante in our conversations around what is racism and what is privilege, because white people very much need to be active in the conversation about how we benefit from that system, especially if we're going to be a part of changing it, and we need to be an active and real part of changing it.
So it also sounds like that what might be on the kind of at the top of that agenda in terms of those seven priorities may shift some depending on where, in fact, even the state legislature is at. I mean, criminal justice reform, as we know in Oklahoma, there was a a very good effort put together by Chris Steele and some others, that the governor appears to have kind of shunted aside at this point in favor of the panel of folks he's called together for this kind of work. But Chris and others were able to elevate the issue into public consciousness, I think, more than had been. And of course, with the teacher walkout we had, which was one of those that was a national story, education has been highlighted probably more than it had for any time in the last 20 years.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All important stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine at this point in time, working in a culture and kind of an era of what I think is probably the worst polarization since the Civil War era here in the country, and you're working with a diverse group of denominations and communions ranging from Roman Catholic to African Methodist Episcopal to Quaker to United Church of Christ and the like. Mm-hmm. So a wide variety of social stances and of polities and of governance and how things get done. Mm-hmm. So how do you think the political polarization in church and society affect the work of the Conference of Churches?
It absolutely affects the work of, I mean, it affects the work of any organization trying to navigate this world. And that's a part of coming outside of our silos that I mentioned. You know, we can't come out of our silos without engaging these topics. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, society has created this culture of division that has grown solid, sturdy roots in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So the divisiveness is rooted deep.
Mm-hmm.
So then the conversation has to be about if we're going to uproot that division, which should be the call of faith communities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Needs to be at the heart of our moral compass, is getting those roots out of the ground and creating a space for unity.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge there is that when you say the word political, what people hear is partisanship.
Right.
And getting those two things unlinked is one step of that process, is unlinking those topics.
Mm-hmm.
The next step of the process is getting people at the table.
Mm.
And that's beautiful language.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds great
Doesn't
in a sermon.
It?
It's, you know, the word unity just floats in the air with glitter and butterflies.
Uh-huh.
But it's dirty, messy work.
Right.
And it is getting down into the weeds of calling upon every person, no matter your theological perspective, no matter your political perspective, to the work of being actively uncomfortable.
Right.
Because we're never going to get to glitter butterfly unity until we are sweating in the ground with one another and seeking that discomfort. The problem is that human nature doesn't want that.
Right.
We're going to run from it.
Right.
So the nature of the work of OCC is struggling with this polarization that exists in society, roots in the ground, and we now have to uproot those, you know, deeply embedded divisions.
Right. And it's rooted in every congregation of our particular communion.
Yes.
So it's not something that we're, you know, like we've got to figure it out in our shop, and now you all figure it out.
Exactly.
Right.
It's across the board. It's secular society. It's religious society. It's everybody. No one's immune from this. So it's doing that work, but also getting people to seek discomfort for the sake of unity.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes in all directions. Mm-hmm. That goes across any perspective. We have to be willing to sit across the table from a person that we completely disagree with for the sake of uprooting the divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really hard to convince people to do.
Right, right. The way I say something similar is that, folks say, well, civil discourse. Well, civil discourse is on the one hand what one side says after they threw a punch, and they don't want to be punched back. Mm-hmm. You know, so let's be civil about this.
It's reactive.
Right, it's reactive rather than, no, it's a way of having very difficult conversations with each other about things that we care about deeply, but we deeply disagree, and we yet have to find some way to live together. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to find some way of separating, mm-hmm. Of saying, you know, I'm done with the table.
Right.
I have to push away from the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's our natural inclination just as human beings to walk away from what is making us uncomfortable in that place and time. The call to unity requires us to force ourselves to be uncomfortable within this frame of civility. You know, we also have to learn to be civil within our discomfort, and that's always present and unfortunately has been tossed aside with this disparity and divisiveness.
Right. It's a difficult time to do church work. It's a difficult time to do interreligious work, but oh my gosh, what other work is more important?
That's right.
Than at this point in time. Let's talk about money for a minute, because a couple of decades ago, I was able to do some research for the Lilly Endowment and local and regional ecumenical and interfaith organizations around the country. And I was told 20 years ago that these middle judicatories, the level of region and diocese and annual conference and presbytery and the like, that this was an endangered species.
Right.
That people want to fund the congregations, the national church would kind of take its cut, but these middle level, not so much, which created quite an issue for a lot of state level conferences and councils of churches that were dependent on middle judicatory funding.
Mm-hmm.
So how has OCC been navigating these very choppy waters?
Oh, so choppy. Like white caps out there.
Right, white caps.
White caps
all the
everywhere.
Time.
All the time. You know, when we were founded in 1972, we were 100% funded by our congregations and communions that were a part of OCC. Mm-hmm. Here we are now in the year 2019, and that has been drastically reduced for the very reasons that you've mentioned. Churches are hurting, denominations are hurting, and a lot are very much in survival mode. Mm-hmm. And when that is happening, organizations like OCC that are doing this vital work of unity and connection are the first to go, because we're a luxury item when it comes to ministry.
Right, although you point out all of the kind of essential connections that an OCC helps make.
Right.
My experience over time has been people say we need connections, but they really have a difficult time paying for connections.
That's right. So what we have been doing at OCC is really taking a look in the last year and a half of systemic change.
Okay.
We have to start shifting the way that we are seeking funding and engaging funders. Today, the majority of our funding is coming through individual donors.
Ah, really?
Yes. Okay. Individual donors are making up, you know, the base of our funding structure. Huh. And because we are this unique luxury item, it attracts individual donors, and especially, if not more so, individual donors who are disenchanted with the structure of church, who are disinterested in divisiveness, especially within churches fighting with one another, maybe interdenominational fighting, individuals who see the value of the mission. So we are more effectively, I believe, tapping into the gift giving of individual donors, but also we have to be creative about the way we're engaging our work. We have to be relevant. So we are no longer doing things just because we've always done them. You know, if we've been doing something for 30 years, but it's a program that has declined in the last 5 years and it ends in a deficit every year, then we're not going to do that anymore. That's just living with good stewardship, being fiscally responsible with our donor dollars. But then I am also envisioning, where are the gaps? Where are the gaps in our society that OCC can help fill? And I spoke to that a little bit earlier, but local churches can't do everything.
Right.
And secular society can't do everything.
Right.
There's a huge gap.
Right.
And OCC is figuring out and strategizing very accurately, very intentionally around how do we fill that gap, because that is where you will engage people's passion. Mm-hmm. That is where you will engage mm-hmm. effective ministry. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that we have to go about engaging in this work. And I have found that when you're doing effective, engaging things that are making a difference and mm-hmm. that are filling gaps mm-hmm. while being fiscally responsible, mm-hmm. the donor dollars will come. Mm-hmm. It is a shift. Mm-hmm. It's like steering a ship, right? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. the white caps are choppy, mm-hmm. but we have to navigate them.
Mm-hmm. And it also sounds, to shift the metaphor just a little bit, like you're rebuilding the ship as you're sailing it.
I love that metaphor. That's so accurate, actually, because, you know, sometimes the waves just beat down your ship you can either sink.
Yeah.
Or you rebuild that sucker and you just keep on floating.
Yeah. Some state councils have failed in recent years for these very reasons like we're talking about here.
Right. Yeah. You have to be innovative.
You do.
And if you're in local church ministry, you know that more than ever. You have to be innovative in your local church ministry. You have mm-hmm. to be innovative in how you engage people, and OCC is no different.
Okay, one other tension I want to talk about a little bit, just because I think it's a really interesting one from an organizational dynamic perspective. When I studied these state conferences some years back, and both then with my experience when I was for a couple of years president of the board at OCC back in the late 1990s, I experienced the sort of twofold nature of these conferences of churches. On the one hand, there was the board of directors, to whom you're accountable, who are the, in some way, official representative of their communions at the table, oftentimes appointed by or recruited by a judicatory head, a communion head, or somebody within their ecumenical committee at their regional level. And then you have your Council of Communion heads. Mm-hmm. And often around the board of directors table, I experienced you'd have at least some social justice advocates there who were appropriately impatient
sure.
about things getting better now.
Right.
And oftentimes we're frustrated with our own denomination's inability to move on something.
Right.
And then you have the table of communion leaders who are using language, you know, some of them would be right there with the advocates. Mm-hmm. And some of them come from traditions where you don't move on something until there's consensus mm-hmm. And until the issue is either mature or ripe would be the language.
That's
used.
Great language.
And so you'd have the, we need to move on it now versus we need to wait and right. and we need to talk about this further. So mm-hmm. how has that played out? Do you have an example of where that maybe has played at OCC?
Sure. Yes, the twofold system is very accurate. How I have navigated that, at least in the last year, is to really get my board to hone in on governance.
Hmm.
You know, that
mm-hmm.
is your role mm-hmm. here in this organization, and that's what we need you to be.
Mm-hmm.
We have an advocacy committee that tracks legislation, that engages in that work, and we have our communion leaders who are ultimately the names on the signature line when we go public,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So those are all very distinctive roles, and keeping them in their lane is a part of the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I have found just in general is that our focus areas are like a map for me. I know where my boundaries are within those areas.
Mm-hmm.
I know the
mm-hmm.
things within each of those focus areas that I can speak on with, you know, uniformity and full support, because
mm-hmm.
we've outlined them. We know what our theological statements are.
Mm-hmm.
When things pop up, when an issue pops up, one of the things that happened this last year is the legislature moved forward on a permitless carry bill.
Right.
That is open carry for firearms here in the state of Oklahoma. That goes into effect November 1st.
Right.
When that popped up, the first time, I might add, because it came up two sessions ago, passed the House, passed the Senate, Governor Fallon vetoed the measure. Mm-hmm. And she vetoed it largely in part of community pushback and from the faith community. Mm-hmm. Here we go again with the new governor. So they pop it back up. Of course, it passes the House and Senate and it's signed into law. But prior to that, OCC was able to mobilize as a voice in opposition to that bill. And the process for me was not board of director led, because they're governance. Mm-hmm. It was communion leader led. Mm-hmm. I took that bill and emailed my communion leaders and said, this is outside of our scope. Mm-hmm. This does not fall within our focus areas. However, we are being called upon to be a faith and moral voice in opposition to this legislation. Give me a green light or red light. And if I don't get a full green light, I don't act.
Right, right.
And that has happened in a lot of instances where things have popped up. I don't have full support, so I don't move.
Right.
But.
And then somebody's saying, why isn't OCC speaking on this?
Yes.
Say, well, I can't.
And, you know, I try and communicate that it's very delicate, but such is the work of unity. It's very delicate. I can say that there was a particular bill that went through two sessions ago that personally, as Shannon, opposed 100%. Mm-hmm. But we had some communions that were in support. So OCC said nothing. A particular senator who knows me well reached out to me directly, very upset that I wasn't saying anything, very upset that OCC wasn't speaking. And in speaking with them, you know, it's very hard to delineate that, to say that I am me, but I am I am also, you know, the face of a lot of people.
And the longer you're in the role, the more you become the face of a lot of people.
That's
and
right.
The less you're yourself in some ways.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So just explaining to them, I'm with you as me, but I can't, I have to have everybody in the ship to move it forward. So now the flip side of that, what can be frustrating is that when we do get to speak, it's powerful because I'm speaking in with all of this depth.
Right. And being relevant on everything means you're actually irrelevant all the time in some ways, because then your voice just isn't trusted as much as when you've got the community leaders behind you. I remember very well being told at one point that when, you know, a particular denomination takes a stance, most, you know, maybe not the legislator, him or herself, but their staffer has somewhere on file. So tell me about the demographics of that constituency, and you'll know that, you know, well, 30% are actually probably with you and 70% against you on that.
Right.
And so, having those communion leaders with the variety of communions you have, speaking in one voice, it just creates, it's a whole lot more powerful than any one of them speaking on their own.
Which I think is a part of the advantage to these denominations being a part of OCC, because especially if you're a smaller denomination, your voice is amplified.
Absolutely. Okay, as we come towards the end here, tell me about perhaps a concern you have with OCC as you're looking down the road, and a hope you have for what yet might be.
A concern will always be being impactful. You know, we always need to be ahead of the trends. And part of that is really staying rooted and grounded in the community, being out in the community, being engaged with those around us, and knowing what the landscape is so that we can serve it to our fullest ability. That's not so much a concern, but something that's just in there. It's just, it's embedded in the nature. If we're going to thrive and survive, we need to be relevant and we need to be effective. A hope is that we do.
Yeah.
Our hope is that we do make a difference in our community and get faith communities so linked into the world around them, and to get the secular world linked into faith communities as the resources they are. And that looks an infinite number of ways. Mm-hmm. And that is incredibly hopeful, mm-hmm. because the possibilities are endless. Mm-hmm. The avenues are endless. Mm-hmm. It's just, mm-hmm. we have to get everyone on the ship.
Yeah. It's a wonderful hope. As you talk about it, I think, and that's fragile, right? Right? Uh-huh. Because it feels like it's the kind of thing, it's like manna. Mm-hmm. You have it today, you're not counting on it tomorrow.
Right.
Which creates both, it creates an urgency, and it creates this is a little bit like housework. Mm-hmm. you're going to have to redo something the following day. And all the relationships are built on trust that's earned, not assumed, trust that is earned today. Mm-hmm. Because any sense of betrayal from any one of those persons or communions at the table, they might pack their bags and say goodbye.
And that's always a possibility.
Yep.
That a communion decides to walk away from the table, but they're never going to lose their seat at the table.
Right.
That never goes away.
Right.
And I can't, as a leader, navigate an organization out of fear.
Right.
Happening.
Right.
And so, no. Yeah, we are housekeeping, but it's also staying again ahead of the trends and being flexible and nimble enough to make those shifts and make those changes and maintain what we need and not be afraid of saying, that's not working anymore. Yeah. What will?
I really admire the work you're doing. Love talking to you today, and thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Committing Faith in Public, a podcast from the Religion and Public Life Initiative at Phillips Theological Seminary in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Copyright PTS and Gary Peluso Verdend. The views and opinions expressed during the podcast are those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect an official position of Phillips Theological Seminary.